Welcome to a financial planning podcast with a down-to-earth vibe. Sasquatch listens while doing his taxes. This is Through the Pines. On this episode, we explore the legacy planning phase of life, which includes your portfolio and risk tolerance, tax planning, qualified charitable distributions, charitable remainder trusts, estate plans, and yes, helping your grandchildren. Hopefully you have some at this time or at that time. I don't have any yet, so, you know, we'll get there. We cover these topics and more on this episode of Through the Pines. Our advisors for this episode are Rex and Brandon with Plan with Baxter. How you doing, Rex?
I am too good. Thanks for having us, Brandon.
Yeah, and Brandon is also in studio in the trailer in Banyan One. Back again for the Forbes Best in State Wealth Management Teams for Utah. Voted 2 years in a row. Also, the Advisor Hub fastest growing advisors to watch under $1 billion and the receivers of the Ameriprise Client Experience Award, which means they know what they are doing. So we will jump into this episode talking about legacy planning and start off with portfolio and risk tolerance. What do people's investment portfolios look like later in life? And this is very general, I guess, right? Everyone's looks different, I'm assuming.
Yep. And thanks again for having us, Brandon. I think this one is, it catches people off guard because people believe that, you know, man, I'm young, I'm going to be saving money, I'm aggressive, I'm in the market. But then as I get close to retirement and as I'm in retirement, I'm just going to sell everything to cash, right? Because now that I'm in retirement, I can't stand to lose any money. And while that's true of a portion of your portfolio, a large portion of your money is still, right, when you're in early retirement, a large portion of your money you're not going to touch for 10, 20, 30 years. But then as you get into late retirement, that's what we're focusing on today. Late retirement, people's mindset towards money starts to change, right? They start to look at the assets they've accumulated. If everything's been done right, right, they've got more than enough to live on. And then they start to say, well, what is the purpose of this money, right? I've got enough for myself now. Who is going to end up using this money? And a lot of times it's kids, it's grandkids. Mm-hmm. And so their risk tolerance changes, right? And like you mentioned, it's different for everybody, but a lot of people start to look at their younger kids or their younger grandkids and say, hey, I can take on more risk again, right? I can let this grow. I can let, you know, take as much opportunity as is available. And so we see people young in life be very aggressive, getting close to retirement, back that off a little bit, get a little bit safer, early retirement, stay safer, and then start to, as they get into late retirement, turn up the dial on risk.
Hmm. Interesting. Rex, you have some opinions on this?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think a lot of people just don't think that through. Even as they get into their 70s and 80s on as far as risk tolerance and where they're headed and how aggressive or conservative they're being. But when they take a step back and we just have a philosophical, you know, discussion with them about how much of this money are you really going to use, right? If we're working with somebody that let's say they've got, you know, $2 million across their different accounts, things like that, even if they go into a care center, you know, we may end up spending $500,000 to $1 million through that care center on both the husband and the wife. But then we have another $1 million that's probably going to get passed on to heirs, either kids or grandkids or whoever that may be. And so that the rest of that, you know, the time frame on that could be, if they're in their early 80s, you could have 10 years of their life or 15 years of their life. And then if they're in their 80s, that means that their kids are probably in their 40s and 50s. And so you have another 20 or 30 years still on top of that, unless it goes to grandkids. Then you've got 60 years, right? Oh. I mean, you can ride through a lot of market cycles over 60 years. And so I think as people start thinking this through and being intentional about their assets and being intentional about their risk and which assets do we want to take risk with, there's a lot of different strategies we get into as we get halfway through our retirement and start looking at the legacy of your money. What legacy are you trying to create for your family or for, you know, for charities, for nonprofits, for whatever your passions are in life? And let's walk through each of those.
Yeah. I don't know. too many people who think about that in their 20s, you know, or their 30s or their 40s. And then maybe in their 50s, they start thinking, oh, what am I going to leave behind? And how do we do that? Like, you know, how do we structure that? So that's something you guys are familiar with doing, I take, Brandon. No,
but in your, when you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, Brandon, you should be thinking about this for your parents, right? Mm. Because typically when you're in your 40s, you're having those conversations with your parents. And unfortunately, a lot of those conversations for the 40-year-olds are, oh my gosh, you're old. And so you better be conservative. And that's not the reality of it. The reality is that those 30, 40, 50-year-olds should have a paradigm shift and say, look, mom and dad, spend what you want to spend. Absolutely. Right. Enjoy your life. You work for it. You know, we don't want anything. We don't expect anything. And so, you know, but if there's going to be money left, then I've got 30 years. Be aggressive with that portion of the money. Grow it for my kids, for your grandkids. Grow it for whoever you're going to grow it for. And unfortunately, I think a lot of that senior population takes their cues from their children. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the children just take the easy answer of, no, just be conservative with it. Just go put it in CDs or just go keep it in your checking account in case you know, want to go buy a couch with $1 million.
Yeah, I saw that firsthand in my family. Do you have a hard time convincing, I guess, the conservative kids in their 40s with their money that they don't want their parents to take risks for the next 30 years with their money?
Really, it's a conversation, right? There's not a right or a wrong answer. In fact, if it makes someone so nervous that they're not able to, you know, enjoy life or sleep at night, then obviously, yeah, we need to be more conservative. But most times when we can go through kind of the planning scenarios and really ask someone, well, what is risk, right? What is the risk that we're taking on in the market? And kind of the more obvious answer there is the risk is that the market could crash at any time, right? And it might take 3-5 years before that comes back. And so that's really the main risk when you look back through history. And so if that's the risk and that we might, you know, we might not be able to spend or access this money very well for 5 years, you know, a lot of people can stomach that risk in exchange for higher growth rates. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we have those discussions with people and they still say, yeah, I still don't know. I still don't, then great. Right. I mean, there's some people who, even when they're young, can't take higher amounts of market risk, and that's all right. We just need to plan accordingly and help them understand all their options.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on. So we're in March of 2024 here, and April 15th or tax day is coming up soon. So is there a need to do tax planning later on in life?
I think as we get later in life, tax planning takes on a little bit of a different view to where you're trying to max out your current tax brackets best you can for that next generation again. And so a lot of times what we get into is doing Roth conversion. So let's just use kind of an example. If somebody's in the 22% tax bracket, let's say they're making, you know, $150,000, something like that. And just for the sake of example, tax brackets will change. And so I want to keep this podcast a little bit evergreen, but let's say that the 22% tax bracket goes up to 400,000 for the sake of argument, then you have a lot of room before we start into that next tax bracket. And so if your kids are in a higher bracket, as they're progressing and as tax law changes, then we may want to look at Roth conversions and converting traditional IRAs and 401ks and retirement money and paying the taxes at the parents' tax rate and trying to max that out and getting that into a tax-free bucket to where it's going to be in a tax-free bucket for the next 30 years until it gets over to the kids or the grandkids, whoever we're passing that money on to. So I think there's issues along that. I think there's some other tax planning that get involved about, you know, charitable distributions, charitable contributions, and how you're making those. And so I'm going to have Brandon talk a little bit about some qualified charitable distributions, which is newer in the tax laws, as far as newer, meaning the last, it's become much more popular the last 5 years is what I've seen. to where people are hearing about it more, accepting it more, and understanding it better. So,
Brandon?
Yeah, and if you don't, let's definitely touch on that. Before we get away from Roth conversions, I've heard countless times people say, I'll be dead, I don't care, right? Doesn't matter to me, you know, and that, you know, comes in. Right. And you know, sure, but at the end of the day, if we've got a big sum of money and we can make that bigger by not paying as many taxes, usually that's a win, right? And those strategies are not difficult, right? Most times it's just the client says, yeah, let's go ahead and do this, and I can take care of, you know, everything on my end. I just need to make sure you understand what it is and before I do that. And so I think that's something where if you have kids in really high tax brackets, this is a strategy that you should consider is Roth conversions. Because if you have kids in high tax brackets and maybe your tax bracket isn't as high, then we should be at least talking about this. Because, you know, the net effect is that your kids are going to get a lot more money tax-free. So anyway, that's kind of the Roth conversion side of it. Now, the qualified charitable distributions, also known as QCDs, because we like our acronyms.
Yep.
Are essentially, once you turn age 70 and a half, and it's still age 70 and a half, sometimes it's tempting to think maybe it's 72 or 73 now, right? Because that's when our RMDs or required minimum distributions start. But it's actually, once you're 70 and a half years old, you've got money in a traditional IRA, you can actually donate that money directly to a charity, a church or charity, you know, a qualified entity. If you send it over there, then you don't recognize that distribution as income. And so you might say, well, why do you do this? And I've got to point out, the first and foremost, you're not making money by giving money to charity, right? Like when you give a dollar to charity and then you get a tax deduction of 22 cents or 30 cents, right? You're not in the positive. You're definitely being a giving person. However, we have a lot of clients that are charitably inclined and they want to give money to charity, or they're already going to give money to a church. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, and we can take money directly out of their IRAs, send it over to that church or to that charity, well, the church or charity's tax exempt, so they don't pay taxes on it. And then you don't pay taxes on it. And so we effectively just save all that tax money. Now, can we do that without the QCD and take a distribution, take it into your own account, and then send it to the church or the charity? Yes, you can. But the problem there is you have to work your way up. You have to do quite a bit of that before you surpass the standard deduction. Mm-hmm. And a lot of clients in retirement don't have big mortgages. They don't have all the interest. They don't have all those other things. And so if we can just continue to take the standard deduction, but then take money and all of our charitable contributions come directly out of the IRAs, that saves them quite a bit in taxes.
How do you, I know you can't go too deep when you're talking about taxes, because if you want to give that qualifier that you are not a tax planner.
Yeah, not an accountant.
Not an accountant. Yep. And so how far do you get, I guess, with that, and before you bring in an accountant to make those decisions?
Oh yeah. So when we are meeting with a client, I bring this up. In fact, it's one of the regular things we review with clients on an annual basis that are in those age brackets. Mm-hmm. And it's my job to have that conversation, to say, does this make sense to do that? And if the client says, yeah, holy cow, yeah, I already give money to my church or to this charity, you know, we can save some taxes doing that. Then we like to work with the accountant and talk to their accountant and say, all right, this is what we're trying to do. Does that make sense? The QCDs are a little bit easier, right? Because we can just send those out, the qualified charitable distributions. The Roth conversions, though, absolutely. We want to be working with an accountant, because there's a lot of other things, you know, that come into play with that.
Mm-hmm. Rex, do you use a lot of or see a lot of QCDs in your business?
Yes, we do. We do quite a few, especially because we live in a state. We live in Utah, so we have quite a few clients in Utah that give to the different churches in Utah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that is technically a charitable contribution when you're paying, you know, any of your pledges, your tithes, your, you know, any of those kinds of things. And so we work with people, you know, that are over 70 and a half, that, you know, to see if it makes sense. And again, we are working with the accountants, with their tax preparers, to make sure that this is going to be in their best benefit, right? To reduce the income coming out of the IRAs and thus send it straight as the tithing or the church or the pledge, you know, to the church to avoid the tax on that money and get the full deduction that we can get for them. So we see quite a bit of that before they're 70 and a half. Then we, for a lot of these charitable contributions, we start using appreciated investments. And so if you've got a stock or a mutual fund and it's doubled in value, then you can give a portion of that to the charity, to the church or the charity of your choice. And that way, when they sell it, they don't have to pay the capital gain on that particular holding. And so, because again, they're tax exempt, you're still getting the full donation credit. You're not having to sell it. So you're not having to pay the capital gain on your side. And okay. So there's multiple different things that we want to do as we get into retirement and preparing for retirement, if you're charitably inclined, that we want to be paying attention to from a tax standpoint. So,
Okay. Sounds good. Let's move on to charitable remainder trusts.
Yeah, these are cool. These are kind of fun. We'll use these. So the idea of a charitable remainder trust at a high level is you can give money, donate money to this irrevocable, meaning you can't take it back, right? This irrevocable charitable remainder trust, and still live on the income and live, take a distribution from that trust while you're alive or over a certain, you know, period of time. And then at the end, whatever's remaining, their charitable remainder trust, whatever's remaining in that trust goes to that charity. And so one, you know, the reason people like these is because you can put these together, make that donation, and actually get a tax deduction on a portion of that donation. And so there's a lot of calculations that go into that of how much can you deduct, you know, how much are you going to take from it. But it's just a really good way if you're someone that you've got a charity that you know you want to leave money to anyway, you want to, and you've got maybe a big tax year, maybe you sold a business, you have, you know, something happened where you've got a big inflow of money, you've got a high tax rate in that year, and you want to donate to this, give up some of the control of it, but get a tax deduction, but still be able to live on it. That a charitable remainder trust would make a lot of sense.
Rex, you got any thoughts on charitable remainder trusts?
Yeah, I think we did an entire estate planning podcast on not just charitable remainder trust, but which are, you know, again, talking about acronyms, right? You have CRTs, and then we talked about CRATs and CLATs and TCRATs and T, you know, anyhow, all these.
It was a good time. Right? I mean, yeah, you should go back and listen to that one when you're in the good mood. You know?
When you're on a plane ride for 4 hours, you should absolutely lock that one up. Knock that one out. No, it's more exciting than that. Come on. So I think charitable remainder trusts and charitable lead trusts, both of those have some fantastic ability to take a significant tax deduction for a charitable donation on the front end. And then, you know, each one is handled differently as far as the income over the lifetime and when the charity gets their funds. And so, but I think if we're dealing with, you know, a family that maybe, you know, selling a significant asset, whether it's a business, a lot of land, something like that. And so we've got enormous gains coming into a family at some point in time in a given year, then sometimes it's nice to front end load some of those charitable donations that we're going to give over the next 20 years and get the tax deduction in the year when we need it the most. And so that's why you want to make sure that we're having these conversations before your transactions happen so that we can plan for the fallout of the transaction, both from a tax standpoint, working with us and your tax professional, as well as the investments that come out of it to see if there's other tools that we can leverage to, again, defer or avoid taxes. So.
Okay. Sounds good. This is Through the Pines with Rex and Brandon, planwithbaxter.com. Brandon, do you have some more numbers?
You bet I do.
Yeah.
I bet I do. So this one's interesting. This is...
Well, good.
Yeah. That's the purpose. So United Nations comes out with a bunch of data. First Trust put this together kind of using their data. but it's global births versus global deaths per year. And you know, a kind of an oversimplification of it is if you have more births than deaths in any given year, your population is growing, right? And that's been the case. We've had a population, our world population has been growing for as long as I can remember, my whole life, right? And we see that as you know, technologies are utilized and developed, that typically you see birth rates and survival rates go up. And that kind of progresses that global population. What's interesting, because I remember in elementary school, right? Like everyone kind of, you saw that, like that crazy chart of global population going crazy. And next thing you know, there wouldn't be any room to pitch a tent, you know?
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
that's Mars. We got to move.
Right. Yeah, right. Thank you, Elon. Fortunately, what that model missed was that the behavioral side of things, as nations develop, there is a change in the birth rate, right? That initially it spikes, but then it comes down as people start making more money, and for whatever reason, people start having fewer and fewer kids. And so we can see that back in 1950, the average woman had 4.86 kids.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. On average,
obviously. Not messing around.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Five. Yeah. 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 A family of five kids to today. Right. In 2023.
Let me just go on record of saying that's nothing.
Rex is even amazed. Like, we're just getting started at 4.86.
Yeah. And that probably includes the dog. So, you know,
in 2023, that rate dropped to 2.31.
Yeah, that's wow.
I mean, okay. Dramatic drop on that. Yeah. And so you can see that as that happens, and as those rates drop, eventually you start to see a population decline. And so they've projected this, and it's just a projection, but by about 2086, annual deaths will outnumber the births. And so 2086, I mean, that kind of sounds like a ways, but it's not that far.
I mean, I remember the 80s.
Bring them back.
Yeah.
but this is a problem that our kids and our grandkids are really going to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And Brandon, you and I were talking about this before, mm-hmm. but in our world, real estate appreciates. And why does real estate appreciate? Because you always have more and more demand. People demanding that house. Well, what happens if the population is stagnant, right? If it's mm-hmm. if it's flat, you build a house and it's worth less the next year because it's deteriorating, it's not as new, and you don't have extra demand for that house. If the population starts to decline, now all of a sudden, you know, you've got cities on the outskirts that just start to turn into ghost towns, right? And so, you know, the economic ramifications for population decline are fairly significant. And this is coming pretty quick, right? Probably not in our lifetimes, fortunately, right?
But close
enough that we might witness the start of it.
Yeah. Am I going to be around to see the second 80s? I don't know. Probably not, but it'd be cool.
But it tapers. It tapers, right? Like, 86 is the first year that we start to decline. But that the top of that, you know, that curve where it goes flat for a decade, I mean, that's something we might see.
Yeah.
Interesting. It is thought provoking, right? Because you wonder what other industries might that permeate into, right? Real estate is an obvious one, but then that transfers into possibly lumber, which translates into construction, which translates into, you know, job growth versus job contraction. And then if you're having more technology, does that mean we have higher unemployment rates? I mean, and so, you know, you can see how that could have enormous impacts on an economy and the people that are, you know, and again, I probably won't be planning at this point in time for very many clients, but in 2060, right? And you're working with people that are looking to retire in 2080 and 2086, you're going to have an entirely different set of issues to be looking forward towards in order to plan around. And I think that's when you tie it back to today, what issues are we seeing today that for somebody that's 60 for 20 years from now, that they're going to be addressing, you know, in 2040, 2045, what kinds of issues are we seeing that we've got to be planning on today for those kinds of changes?
A lot happens in 20 years, and that's your legacy period of time to where, you know, I don't know. if that is considered either, Rex, like, you know, like how much is going to change over those 20 years in just the world?
Yeah. I mean, well, so you have up to 5 different presidents in the US during that time frame, right? 5 different groups in Congress. You've got a lot of tax changes. You have obviously in a normal 20 year period, you'll have 2 major recessions at least, typically 3. And so you've got a number of those things that you've got to plan around.
Brandon, you had a thought?
The nice thing, I did a paper actually on this in college.
It feels like you always do a paper. Like how many papers did you do?
A lot of papers.
It's like you have a lot of papers.
I'm proud.
Did you go to Utah State? You went to Utah State where they just write a lot of papers.
No, volatility is the enemy on this, right?
Okay.
And fortunately with this, it shouldn't be a dramatic all at once change.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, my confidence that we'll be, because yeah, there's some serious headwinds with, you know, real estate doing that. But on the other hand, how would that be to graduate? And instead of like figuring out how you go get a mortgage, it's all right, we're going to go fix up a house that's not occupied. I mean, that's a win, right? Wow. That would be a whole different. Yeah. And so I don't know that it's all doom and gloom, but there's a lot of change. And I think that's why it's important to be smart with investments, smart with money, smart with really the planning of the future and looking forward to say, all right, what is going to be different in the future that isn't, you know, mm-hmm. isn't what we experience today.
It's what they did in It's a Wonderful Life. Fixed up that old house. You remember if you know that movie. Also, I was thinking, because I had to, you know, I know who's going to live in the houses, and it's going to be, it's going to be all of the Tesla robots or androids. Because did you watch that one the other day? It was like folding a shirt, and I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. Uh-huh. It was doing a better job than like C-3PO or whatever. Like it was straight up folding a shirt. It was the Tesla droid, but wild. And you know, they're going to have to, they need a place to recharge just like we do.
Right.
So we'll turn those houses into like bot recharge stations or something. Who knows?
Oh, I'm gonna go into like bot cruises. Right. I mean, because certainly they'll want to go on cruises with like Devo.
They've been working hard. Like
Devo to sing. Right.
Oh, love it. So, yeah.
All kinds of things. Yeah.
And nobody ever dies. Right. They just live forever because it's Devo.
That's right.
Estate plans, speaking of, and this is a big part of what we're talking about here. Everybody with anything of value should have at least have a will. And we've talked about this a lot, Rex, but what do you want to hit on that's a little different here today?
Well, it's amazing to me at how many people get to retirement and are even halfway into their retirement that haven't done anything as far as having their wills prepared, or maybe they did something, somebody, you know, kind of lit a fire under them. And when they're 50 and they did a will and a trust, but they haven't even opened it or looked at it for 30 years. And so they've got somebody in there that's going to act as a trustee that they don't want anymore, may have moved across the country and they're just not associated with. Their kids are now of age and can, you know, responsible and can take on that role. And so there's a lot of estate work that typically needs to be reviewed and frequently updated during that stage. And people need to be thinking through that as far as, are we talking about grandkids? Are we talking about kids? Are we talking about charities? You know, and what goes, the age old question of who gets what when, right? And that is estate planning in a nutshell, who gets what when, and going back through that. But I'm amazed literally weekly at people that we meet and we have conversations with about their lack of planning on the estate side. So it's interesting.
Brandon, do you want to chat about the flexibility of trusts?
Yeah. Trusts are, it's fun to describe trusts to people because, you know, most people haven't really explored the realm of trusts and, you know, but they're flexible. I mean, to the point where it's like off of a movie, right? If you really wanted to and say, you need to live on the family farm for 9 months and you don't get it this part of the estate unless you, right? Like you can customize your trust. Now, obviously that makes it a little bit harder on your attorney, yada, yada, right? But, but you can customize your trust to do really whatever you would want. And now most people say, well, why wouldn't I just split it between all my kids evenly at my death, right? And that's what most people do.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's other needs, right? Sometimes you've got substance abuse and you don't want to write a child out of the will just because they've got substance abuse necessarily, right? But you want to make sure that you don't just give them a large sum of money because that's not going to help either. Mm-hmm. And so you can set parameters, whether that's, you know, abstinence from that substance or setting a monthly amount that goes to them every month to make sure, you know, that they've at least got something to fall back on if everything else goes right. If you've got spendthrift issues, right? People just they can't control their money, right? They're just addicted to spending. Yeah. And so you can kind of control that. And then you got other things where sometimes some kids have needed extra help, right, along the way, and the parents have come in and given large portions of money, and so you want to make sure that's controlled and taken care of. In my situation, right, we've got young kids, and so the last thing I'd want to do is have all of my net worth that I've built plus my life insurance that I have on myself plus life insurance on my wife, right, that's really set to take care of if one of us dies. But if we both pass away, that's a huge sum of money mm-hmm. that I don't want being split three ways between my kids when they turn 18. Right. I mean, that would make for an amazing couple of years as a
that's
teenager.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
But it would be following.
That's what we're feeling.
One of the worst depressions I can only imagine, right, is you realize you've just squandered what was a really good shot. And so you can spread that out. And that's what I did, right, is you know, when they turn up until 30, I limit what the trust will cover. And then at 30, I give them a small amount of money to kind of try their hand at, realize how quick it goes, right? And then another at 35 and another and the rest at 40. And so trying to help people and set them up for success, a trust can do all of those things. And really, it seems like sky's the limit on that, right? Whatever whatever you want to do, you set up a successor trustee, someone you trust or even like a bank or something like that, who reads the trust and distributes the asset of the trust as per your wishes. And a trust is going to be able to let you do that. Whereas a will, the main difference between a trust and a will isn't really a binding contract, right? The judge, all your money goes into probate. A judge is going to look at that, make sure that you didn't owe anybody, you know, and then the judge is going to distribute your assets, you know, based on kind of looking at your will. And if he thinks that looks good, then kind of proceeding that way. The other reason you don't want to go through probate is there's time, right? It takes more time to do that. And then there's costs to do that. And especially if you get any amount of fighting or argument, you know, over who deserves what or what goes where.
Did you see that, Rex, on the screen?
I'm like, what is that? I really got a thumbs up. There is time. We have time.
There are thumbs. Yeah. So it's like this automatic setting that I don't even know how to turn off that. When like every now and then when you do like a thumbs up, like it just pops a thumbs ups on the screen. Okay. So that's what, if you're watching this on YouTube, and if not, that's just watch it for the thumbs up. But Brandon, do you remember that?
Worth watching for a thumbs up.
Yeah, it's worth watching for a thumbs up. It's like a cat ad or something that was there. The air is telling everyone who gets what. It's like a cat food ad, and the cat gets like the condo and all this stuff because he liked the cat so much.
Yeah,
it's like
the mansion.
A mansion. Yeah, it's a fancy feet ad. Fancy feast, not fancy feet. That's a different thing. It's a different person involved.
No, I mean, we've had clients and we've seen times where, you know, animals are part of the family. And sometimes that's, you know, you're leaving money in a trust to care for those animals during their lifetimes. And then you distribute. I mean, the flexibility is as wide as your imagination. I will say that there are times when that's not a healthy thing. And so sometimes it gets down to such a small dollar amount and small things to where the costs of doing it just don't justify the action that you've put in place. And so you do want to think through that really well. And a good estate attorney and working with your advisors, both your financial advisors as well as your tax advisors, typically will try and, you know, within your goals, what you're trying to do, they'll help you go through that path. They'll help you think about the questions, the situations that they've seen, and they'll do all those what if scenarios with you so that it's a well thought out plan, so that you're not having to modify it and amend it very frequently if you don't have to.
One other thing I've got to throw out here at the end too, just things that we see happen that can turn into complete nightmares. Be careful about putting your kids on the title of your home. Some people will do that because like, then I can avoid probate. It'll just, when I die, the ownership goes to my child. And while that's true, the downside to that is you don't get what's called a step up in basis, meaning that, you know, if assets pass through probate or if they pass via trust, if it's done right, then they get what's called a step up in basis, meaning that the value, like it looks like whatever they purchased it for, you know, when you go to pay taxes, yeah, when you sell it, whatever they purchased it for is whatever the value was at the date of death. And so, you know, on a home, you could have tons of gains built up in a home,
yeah,
but if it's passed right the right way, then all those gains are wiped away.
Yeah.
And so that can be highly beneficial.
Unless it's like 2086.
Yes. And then maybe it'll be flat. The other thing we see is like bank accounts, right? People will add their kids to their bank account, be like, oh, this will make it smooth. When I pass, you know, it just goes to their kids. And that's true. But again, the danger with that, A, you're adding liability, right? If your child got sued, was in a car accident, they didn't have adequate insurance. Now all of a sudden they're coming after your bank because they're an owner on it. The other thing too is that doesn't necessarily go through a trust or go through a will, right? And so that child could say, hey, I'm the new sole owner on this bank account, and I don't know that I want to distribute this money out.
Yeah.
And so you want to
be mine now.
Careful about titling ownerships.
Right.
Rex. I think in that same vein, just really quick, in that same vein as retirement accounts, a lot of times I'll see where, just for the sake of what's perceived easiness, is they'll put their oldest child as the sole beneficiary and have a discussion with that child, say, hey, look, you're going to, you know, this is going to you, but you're going to distribute this amongst your three siblings. And the unfortunate part about that is, A, they don't have to. And so if they have a falling out with one or all of them, then they don't have to. Two, all the tax burden falls on the one that's named. And so, you know, and there are certain planning ways where we can try and work around that, but they're complex, they're time consuming, and they don't always work. And so, you know, it's easier just to do it correctly on the front end in this situation, as opposed to sometimes taking what is the perceived easy way out.
Yeah. Should we talk grandchildren? Helping them
out? Let's do. I have one. You have one? Yeah. I have one.
Grandpa Rex in the house. Wow. How's it feel? Right. You know?
Old. Feels old.
Oh, gosh. All right. First up, annual gift tax exclusion for 2024 is $18,000. What does that mean, Rex?
That means that you are allowed to give anybody and everybody up to $18,000 for the year 2024 without having to complete a gift tax disclosure and pay gift taxes on the amount. You give $18,001 and you get to do a gift tax form.
So
that's what
that they don't have to be a grandchild. They can be anyone.
It could anyone be anybody. It could be Brandon. It could be Bobby. It could be, you know, it could be anybody. So.
Okay. Okay.
So another kind of piece on that, right? Any one person can give any other one person 18,000. Now, if maybe you've got grandma and she's trying to give two married people money, those two married people can receive $18,000 a piece. And so now all of a sudden we're at $36,000. Yeah. Now, if you've got a couple, you know, trying to give another couple money, you double that again, right? Because you can crisscross, right? You need to do a diagram on that.
Okay.
But essentially four gifts, right?
Yeah.
When you have four people involved.
Okay.
And so that number can add up. And the purpose of this is to be able to give money without, you know, filing extra gift tax stuff or paying gift tax. Another reason sometimes if you're going to run into estate tax issues, meaning that your estate is going to be so large, right? And when we say estate tax issues, really that starts around $13.61 million.
Oh, get him. Just shy.
Yeah. And it's actually really easy to double that if we do it right. Right. But I think that's a key number to keep in mind. If you look at your net worth and you say, all right, my house, my investment accounts, bank accounts, everything I own is going to exceed that 13.6 or call it $13 million. Then I really, really need to make sure I'm talking to a financial advisor and estate planning attorney to make sure that I'm passing this without paying crate, because the estate taxes, I mean, those get expensive.
Yeah, I imagine.
Really fast.
I can only imagine, because I don't know, but I imagine they do.
But one of the tricks is let's say you're above that threshold, but you don't want to pay. Like, you can start giving out, you know, the $18,000 each year.
Oh, got you. Yeah. Until you're broke.
Yeah.
Until it's all gone. What's an UTMA?
UTMA, Uniform Transfers to Minor Act account. And so this is another way that people, and just going back to late phase retirement, right? People, as they're trying to help out grandchildren, you can actually give money, put money in this Uniform Transfer to Minor Act account, or the UTMA account. That money goes into the social security number of the child with a named custodian, right? That takes care of it for the kid. Obviously, I can't call a 2-year-old and say, hey, I've got some investment strategy things to run by you.
I don't know why not, but it's teaching
you have someone else, right, to take care of that.
Yeah.
But those accounts are good, right? Because they essentially, you can get some of the growth on that to be tax-free because it goes into the kid's tax rates. Mm-hmm. Now, eventually, as that account grows, you know, you start seeing some of the kiddie tax stuff fall back in, and you're going to start paying your own tax rates again eventually. But there is some room there to build up a fairly good little account, you know, $20,000-$30,000, and pay a fairly minimal amount of tax on that. The catch to an UTMA account, though, is it is in that child's social. And when they become of age, it is their money. Whether they are responsible or not, you can say, hey, we set this aside for education, or we set it. And at the end of the day, if they want to go buy a car with it, it's theirs, right? Yeah. And they can cash that out and take it. And so usually, you know, we can provide guidance and help them kind of walk them through that. But technically it is, it's their money.
Well, okay.
So age is different in every state, right? It could be, typically that's between ages 18 and 21. The nice things about the UTMA is it just needs to be used for the child's benefit, right? So that can be extremely broad. It could be used for secondary education. It could be used for clothing, for a trip. It could be used for anything that is for that child's benefit.
Who determines that?
The custodian of the account, right? And so typically that's a parent normally. Sometimes it's a grandparent, but whoever's the custodian on that account is responsible to make sure that those funds are, they have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that they're there to benefit the child, that they're being invested appropriately from a risk standpoint and a performance standpoint, but then also that the funds are being used for that child and not for other family members, things like that. And so that's their responsibility, but it could be for a wedding, it could be for a vehicle, it could be for a computer, it could be for anything. And so they're a lot more flexible than a lot of the other savings vehicles for kids. As far as that goes, the tax benefits are a little bit weaker than some of the other savings programs, like the 529 plans, things like that. And so it just kind of depends on where your priorities are and what you're trying to do and how strongly you feel about whatever the goal is that you're trying to do, whether those are the best fit or whether, you know, other vehicles are a better fit.
Okay. Sounds good. Should we chat 529s, the pros and cons of?
Yeah, 529s are another, you know, very popular. In fact, there's probably the most common, the first thing you think of, right?
Wait, I said 529s, but it's 529s.
Yeah. You don't want to say
529. Yeah. Just, it's like, oh, we know.
No, you hear it both ways. Definitely hear it both ways. But the 529 plans, I mean, they've been around for a while. The benefit to a 529 is you can put a lot of money into a 529 all at once. You get that tax-free growth. The catch, though, is you have to use it for educational expenses. And there's so many times where kids decide they're not going to go to a higher education, or they get a scholarship, or, you know, something happens to where all of a sudden now we've got all this money saved up for a child and they don't need it.
Can you, like, say transportation to school, like, and buy a car?
There's a list, and I should have, really? I should have had that printed out, but it's, it's not a terrible list, but it's also not, it's not nearly as, not even remotely as flexible as like a UTMA account or an UTMA account where you can like just anything.
Yeah.
You know? So I wouldn't cover like a vehicle, but if there was on campus transportation, you know, such as a trolley system or something like that, where you had to have a pass or something like that.
Yeah. It looked like
and
a bus.
Go through that. Right. Yeah. Right. And so, trolley, how old am I? So,
I don't know. I was just trying to like, that's a cool campus. Yeah. So, yeah. Where is that one?
My kids there. The buggy pass.
The buggy pass. finally, to wrap it up, Roth IRA, IRAs for minors. Excuse me. So to fund these, the child will need some earned income. So they got to be like 14, or how does that work?
Well, and speaking of Roth, we got to point out the new change with the 529s is that you can actually, there's a one-time, it's a once in a lifetime exception where you can convert money from 529s over to a Roth IRA.
Awesome.
Which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Still though, the limitation is what if the kid needs it for a wedding, or what if they need it, you know, all of a sudden it goes from education to retirement, which is nice that it's not lost, and Roth IRAs are awesome.
Yeah.
But it still misses some of that flexibility. One other piece of flexibility on the 529 is that you can move it between siblings.
I've got a good question now.
Let's hear it.
I didn't have one before, but you know, I have one now.
Yeah. 40 minutes into the podcast, we got a good one coming.
right. Because I like to pick your brain on how you guys solve problems. So if someone had a 529 account for their kid and it's for education, but the kid was smart and got a scholarship and didn't use it. And so now you do the one-time transfer or whatever to a Roth IRA. But that money was saved because it was meant to be spent, essentially. And so, you know, on education. But now you've got it as a retirement account. Now would it be okay to take a loan out on that money on the IRA for a wedding or something like that?
First, you can't take loans out against Roth IRAs.
What? So, you just take money? What?
So that's the first issue. But you could, depending upon, so there's a number of nuances on the 529 Roth conversions. But essentially, whoever is the beneficiary of that 529 at the time, that's when they get the once in a lifetime conversion. So in theory, what you could do is change the beneficiary to somebody that's over 60, right? That's in retirement, put it into the Roth at that point, do that one time conversion.
It doesn't have to be the same person?
It needs to be up or down the family tree. Has to be upper. The beneficiary can change. You can change it anywhere up or down the family tree, right?
Okay.
And on the 529.
On the 529.
On the 529 account. Okay. And so, so you could put it into the parent's name, essentially, convert $35,000 over to a Roth. It needs to be in the Roth account for 5 years. And then at the end of the five-year period, you could pull it out and use it for anything at that point tax-free. You could use it for a wedding for your child, for your grandchild. Mm-hmm. You could use it for a car. You could use it for a house. You could use it for whatever.
So they go to school and they get a scholarship, but then you change that and say, okay, you can't get married for 5 years.
right. Yeah. You're just putting a line in the sand and say, you know, it takes 5 years for you to really know this person as a partner. Right. You want to make
sure. Totally. Yeah. All right. So there are ways to sort of get that money. See, you guys are smart. I tell you, man.
But there are limitations, right, Tal? And this is why planning is so important on these things.
Okay.
So on to your last one that you asked, the Roth IRAs for minors. These are very popular. People love, and I think the reason people love these is they see the math on them, right? Yeah. They look at it and someone says, man, you can put in couple thousand dollars and if this grows at this rate for 60 years or what, I guess not 60 but 40 years, maybe 60 years,
yeah, maybe,
it's basically funds their retirement. Mm. And that's a really, I mean, that's not wrong, right? It's really cool how you can build money in a Roth IRA completely tax-free. The downside to that though is it's retirement money. Mm. Right? That, you know, are we able to access some of that prior to 59 and a half? Sure, if we were using this right and getting an accountant, but it's kind of a nightmare. Really, a Roth IRA should be, you know, first and foremost a retirement account. And so we set this up, and most people, as they're getting started could really benefit and use that money to help them get an education or get started in life. And when it's just set for retirement, you know, sometimes it's not as exciting that way, but that's not to say it's not a good option either. Mm-hmm. The other thing on this is if you want to fund it, the child needs earned income.
Right.
And so you can't just say, hey, I want to fund, you know, for my 2-year-old, I want to go ahead and start this, unless the 2-year-old has earned income, right? Maybe they're doing like a diaper promo.
That's probably illegal, but okay.
No, like a diaper promotion.
Something like that.
They got some earned income, then you can fund it. But obviously that's a lot harder to do.
Yeah.
But as kids get, they don't need to be super old, right? Especially if you own your own business and you can hire them to do the garbages or do something like that, then we can get that earned income and then fund the Roth IRAs. And that can be a really beneficial.
So if you're a parent, you just like, do you turn your family into a business and actually pay your kids to do chores sort of a thing?
Yeah, people do it, right? And that's the gray area, right? Okay. You want it to be a legitimate, you know, business and a legitimate, right? You don't want to just, but if you've got a cleaning service, you know, and it's a real, I don't know. It depends on how you and your accountant look at that.
Okay.
We feel like it needs to be a legitimate business that the IRS is, right. You know, we don't want to put you in jeopardy of the IRS coming in auditing and questioning if it's, you know, your personal car washing service is really a legitimate business or not.
I just, people would do it. You know what I mean? So yeah, you gotta, okay.
Absolutely. People do it and it doesn't, just because people do it doesn't make it right. Right. And so, but we want people to be doing it the right way. And you do have to have earned income. And so it's got to be something that legitimately they're earning income from in order to fund the Roth IRAs. So.
Okay. All right. Anything else on legacy planning, Rex?
I think that there's so much more that you should reach out to us with your specific questions.
That's the right answer. That is the correct answer. And you can do that at planwithbaxter.com. Planwithbaxter.com is the best place to go for that. And there is a link in the description that'll just take you right there. So, you know, that's all you got to do. Like our Facebook page, keep up to date with us at facebook.com, Pines Podcast, our Instagram also, Pines_podcast. This has been Through the Pines, reminding you to use yesterday's dollars to finance tomorrow's dreams.